Now, let us turn to our main theme, which is, of course, the levels of awareness. Traditionally, these levels are arranged or ordered in various ways. But today, I propose to discuss the levels of awareness under four principal headings. First of all, awareness of things. Secondly, awareness of self. Thirdly, awareness of others, awareness of people. And fourthly, awareness of reality, or awareness of truth, or awareness of the ultimate. And by considering the levels of awareness under these four main headings, we shall be able to obtain, I hope, a fairly comprehensive idea of the true nature of perfect awareness. Now, first of all, awareness of things. When we say things, what do we mean? We mean material things. We mean this cloth and this box and this table and so on. Material things. We mean our whole material environment full of so many objects. We mean, in short, the whole realm of nature. Most of the time, of course, we're just vaguely conscious of the things around us. We have a sort of peripheral consciousness of the things around us. We're not really aware of the things around us, not really aware of our environment, not really aware of nature, not really aware of the cosmos. And we're not really aware because we never, in fact, or very seldom, really stop and look. Perhaps it hasn't occurred to you how very rarely we ever stop and look at something. One might even ask, well, take today. How many minutes, what should speak of hours, has one spent just looking at something? Just looking at it. Well, probably we haven't spent even a matter of seconds. And if we're asked why not, we shall say, because we have no time. This is a characteristic of modern life, modern society, modern civilization, even. We've got no time to stop and look. This is perhaps one of the greatest indictments of modern civilization which could possibly be made. We've no time to stop and look at anything. We pass a tree, maybe, on our way to work in the morning. We've no time to stop and look at it. Even less romantic things, like walls and houses and fences. We have no time to stop and look at anything. So it makes one wonder, well, what is this life? What is this modern civilization worth if one hasn't time to stop and look at things? In the words of the poet, what is this life if full of care, and full of care means full of care, we have no time to stand and stare. Because the poet puts in stare for the sake of the rhyme. He doesn't mean staring, he means just looking, just seeing. So we've no time to look. We've no time to see. We've no time, in other words, to be aware of things. This is something which we have to realize, or at least of which we have to remind ourselves. And there's another difficulty. Even supposing we have some time, even supposing we can stop and look at something and try to be aware of it, there's another difficulty, there's another factor which comes in the way. And this is that we very rarely, we hardly ever see the things in themselves. What we usually see, even when we stop and look at something, is our own projected subjectivity. We look at something or some things, but we see it, we see them, as it were, through the veil, through the curtain, through the mist, through the fog, if you like, of our own mental conditioning. I remember some years ago in Kalimpong, on one of my walks with a Nepalese friend, I happened to stop at the foot of a magnificent tree. Must have been a pine tree. So I stopped and looked up at it, and I couldn't help exclaiming when I saw this beautiful smooth trunk and this mass of beautiful deep green foliage. I couldn't help exclaiming, "Well, isn't it a beautiful tree?" So this Nepalese friend who was standing next to me, he said, "Oh yes, it's a beautiful tree." He said, "There's enough firewood there for the whole winter." So he didn't see the tree at all. All he saw was a certain quantity of firewood. And most of us, we may say, look at the world, look at the whole world, look at all material things in just this way. So it's this way of looking at things that we have to learn to undo. We have to learn to look at things themselves for their own sake, untainted, if you like, unstained by any trace of subjectivity of our own personal preferences and desires and prejudices. And this sort of attitude, this sort of approach, is very much emphasized in Far Eastern Buddhist art, in the art of China, the art of Japan. I remember in this connection it is said, or it is written, that a certain disciple, a certain apprentice painter, once asked his master, who was a celebrated artist, how to paint bamboos. How to paint bamboos. So the master didn't say, "Well, you begin by taking your brush and making such and such strokes on the silk or the paper." No. He didn't say anything about brushes. He didn't say anything about ink. He didn't say anything about paint or painting. He just said, "If you want to paint bamboos, then learn to see bamboos first." So this is a quite sobering thought. You rush in trying to paint something which you haven't even looked at it first. This is what many artists do, or many amateurs in art, at least. So the disciple, we were told, just looked. He went about looking at bamboos, looking at the stems, looking at the leaves, looking at them in the mist, looking at them in the rain, looking at them in the moonlight, looking at them in the spring, looking at them in the autumn, looking at them in the winter, looking at large ones and small ones, looking at them when they were green and when they were yellow, when they were fresh and springing, when they were old and decayed, looking at bamboos. And we're told he spent years in this way, just looking at bamboos. And in this way he became really aware of the bamboos. He really saw them. And seeing them, being aware of them in this way, he became, as it were, one with the bamboos. His life, as it were, passed into the life of the bamboos. The life of the bamboos passed into his life. He became one with the bamboos. And then, we are told, then, and then only, he painted bamboos. And then, of course, you may be sure they were real bamboos which he painted. In fact, we may say it had become a question of a bamboo painting bamboos. Now, according to Buddhism, at least according to Far Eastern Buddhism, the tradition of China, the tradition of Japan, above all perhaps the tradition of Chan or Zen, this should be our attitude towards all material things. This should be our attitude towards the whole of nature, not only towards bamboos, but towards the sun and the moon and the stars and the earth, all trees and flowers and human beings and faces. This should be our attitude. We should learn to look, learn to see, learn to be aware, and in this way we should become supremely, as it were, receptive. We'll become, as it were, one with, at least fused with, all things. And out of this oneness, out of this realization of affinity, of deep unity, out of this, if we are of artistic temperament, out of this we shall create and truly create. So much then for awareness of things.